Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Serious news. We have been talking a lot about the NFL draft, and what remains the biggest story in the NFL now is Deshaun Watson. And the latest news on Deshaun Watson is the Tony Busby Law Firm sent out an email announcement on Wednesday evening announcing that they now had another lawsuit that they had filed. And I'm reading directly from the statement from the Busby Law Firm. Today, meaning yesterday, the Busby Law Firm filed its 23rd case against Deshaun Watson for allegations of assault and harassment. The woman in this newest case did not file as a Jane Doe. Instead, she chose to name herself. The cases are now consolidated without an official order in one court. All women have voluntarily identified themselves. These brave women now feel emboldened and will not be intimidated. As said before many times, we are proud to represent these women, to seek justice on their behalf, and stand up for survivors everywhere. Time's up. This is the Busby Law Firm, and that is their statement they made on the 23rd different lawsuit being filed in this situation. And so, there are a lot of angles here to consider as we continue to break down the Deshaun Watson case. One is that all these women have now gone public using their actual names. The bigger issue at play here, however, was reported on Wednesday night by the Washington Post, and that is that at least five women now have gone to the Houston Police Department and reported that they were sexually assaulted by Deshaun Watson and asked them to open criminal investigations into his behavior during these massages. Now, so far, there has not been criminal charges filed against Deshaun Watson, but when five women are all alleging the same thing, I think the odds are rapidly increasing that there will be criminal charges filed against Deshaun Watson alleging that he committed sexual assault. All right, this is me putting my lawyer hat on right now. And this has all spiraled rapidly out of Deshaun Watson's control, and it is an unmitigated disaster, however you would assess it, for Deshaun Watson. This is me telling you what I would be telling Deshaun Watson if I were his attorney advising him right now, and that is, you have got to settle this case, okay? That's what I would be telling him right now. I would be saying, you've got to settle all of these cases. If it costs you tens of millions of dollars, you can come out with a statement and say that you don't believe you committed any crimes, but you understand that you made these women uncomfortable. That wasn't your intent. You apologize for all of your behavior in this entire case, for calling any of these women's motivations into question, that you are going to settle these cases, that you acknowledge that you have behaved in an inappropriate manner while you don't believe that you have behaved in a criminal manner, that it's inappropriate, that you believed everything that happened was consensual, but now having heard their stories, you understand that many of these women did not consent to your behavior, and you are promising that you will become a better human being going forward. And in the meantime, you are settling these cases, you accept your punishment from the NFL, and you have to desperately hope that if you do that, the criminal charges will not be pursued aggressively because these women won't necessarily cooperate with police. Now, let me say this for a minute, and this is me speaking as a lawyer. I don't understand why we allow criminal behavior, potentially, to be bought off if it is of a sexual nature. In other words, let me explain what I mean. If you were charged with murder, let's just pretend that everybody out there listening to me right now, if you woke up one day and you got charged with murder and you were super rich like Deshaun Watson is, you couldn't call the family of the person that you were accused of murdering and say, hey, what if I give you several million dollars? Will you not participate and cooperate with this story? You couldn't do that. That would not be in any way remotely permissible. Everybody would say, you're not only are you behaving inappropriately, you're actually obstructing justice, and you might get a new criminal charge that was filed against you. That's what very likely might happen. So I don't understand how it is considered to be legal, and this is me speaking as a lawyer, for someone who is rich to commit sexual assault and then decide that they should be able to buy off their alleged victim and have the criminal case basically disappear. It shouldn't be legal in my mind, because what that does is devalue sexual assault, because the idea then is if you pay enough money, this case just goes completely away. And I'm not saying women shouldn't file civil lawsuits when they are sexually assaulted, but I'm saying the first result should be the criminal charges. And then if you also want to file a civil lawsuit, that's fine. But there, if I had a daughter and she'd come to me and said, Deshaun Watson sexually assaulted me, the last thing I would say to her is, well, how much money do you think we can get for that? I would want Deshaun Watson in jail. I wouldn't care about the money. I would want him to pay for what he did to my daughter. And I think that's the way that most people out there would respond. And if I were the woman in this case, I wouldn't want money from Deshaun Watson for what he did to me. When somebody's rich, they always have money. I would want him to have to serve criminal time. And so that is what is at stake now, with a report from the Washington Post that at least five different women have now gone to authorities and said, Deshaun Watson sexually assaulted us, and we want criminal charges brought against him. Over 20 women have said he sexually assaulted them, and they have filed civil lawsuits. But now at least five different women have gone to authorities in Houston, and they are saying, we want for there to be consequences here for his behavior, not just of a financial nature, but we want him to potentially face prison time. And let me tell you something. This is becoming a major and significant threat to Deshaun Watson, not just playing football ever again, but to Deshaun Watson potentially facing serious time in criminal court and potentially in jail as well. I mean, it's possible that Deshaun Watson, I mean, this is crazy. And it would have been even crazier if we'd said it a couple of weeks ago when these lawsuits first started getting filed. It's possible Deshaun Watson is the Jeffrey Epstein or Bill Cosby of the NFL, and that he is going to go to jail for years, and he may not play in the NFL ever again. That's how serious this legal jeopardy that he is under right now is. And let me tell you, if they file criminal charges against him, this is not something that's going to get resolved at all in 2021. This is something that could very easily extend all the way into 2022. And it's something, if he went to trial, where Deshaun Watson may never be able to play in the NFL ever again. And his legal team, in my mind, has not done a very good job so far of defending him. In fact, in my mind, they have actually made him look even more guilty so far. But he keeps getting pushed further and further into a corner now, where at this point, I really do believe that criminal charges are going to be filed against him on top of all the civil lawsuits. And this thing is trending in a really bad way for, I think, beyond a shadow of a doubt, for Deshaun Watson.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We are joined now by one of Outkick's writers, Bobby Barak. He's been breaking a lot of news all across the landscape of sports. And Bobby, I want to start off with this question I'm sure you saw about, and I talked about this in the first hour of the program, But I'm sure you saw the story surrounding the NBA players who have these deals with Chinese shoe companies that have specifically said, yes, we are using Chinese slave labor, Muslims in the Xinjiang region, the Uyghur population there. This is kind of a crazy story for the NBA. I feel like it's almost checkmate on the NBA-China relationship. Am I crazy, or do you buy in as well?
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I know you had wrote a column about this yesterday. It was a wild to me, Clay. I think everybody knows with the NBA in China. I mean, obviously it's hypocritical in many ways. It's kind of disturbing. But if you think about it from like a history perspective, the NBA brands itself as, especially LeBron James, some of the star players, as more than basketball.
Yeah.
But in many cases, the most inhumane treatment that I would consider like closest to apples to apples, but like Nazi Germany, is what's going on in China right now.
I don't think there's any doubt. Yeah.
And I think that's what's so wild about it is that I don't even think there's a close second. So how do you brand yourself that and getting business and support that with what they're doing in China? It's almost like in some ways they're not aware or they're not up to date or they just don't care, which I think is most likely. But it's just wild to me that we should take them seriously when what's going on in China and their partners, support, and most importantly, they're afraid to say anything negative about anything that affects their bottom line in China. And, you know, you look like, you know, there's no doubt in your mind. But I just think it's wild because what's going on in China, it's not just the NBA. I think it's an undercover story in world news. I think the media has covered it like cowards. I think the NBA players have turned an eye to it. And for them, for this thing to come out and for some of these details and for them to really do this without any shame, it just tells you everything you need to know about these players. And I think really dating back two falls ago when the NBA, LeBron James told Daryl Morey, you know, don't be selfish. There's consequences for what you say. That opened up a lot of eyes. And I thought at the time, as bad as that was, I thought maybe at some point the NBA would address it and try to like say, okay, you know, try to explain the relationship with China better or try to go back on their word. They've doubled, tripled down since then. And that to me is the surprising part in all this, that they have no shame. And I don't think they're ever going to call out China or say anything of consequence.
A bunch of stories I want to dive into with you. I know you heard me saying that once the Masters began, cancel culture vanished. And it is funny, isn't it, that if you're willing to stand up to the cancel culture mob for a relatively short period of time, every story basically vanishes, especially in sports, because people really care about the game itself. And once the Masters teed off, there was almost no discussion anywhere about the idea of canceling the Masters or anything else. And yet here we are, like, it's amazing how often these stories seem to emerge where companies, and certainly in the world of sports, organizations, players, coaches, whatever it is, immediately turn tail as soon as they get a couple of negative tweets.
Yeah. I like this story because yesterday you had Will King on your radio.
That's right.
Show, and he said, it's really only 36 hours you have to deal with it. And it's absolutely true because what happens here is these vultures of the cancel culture movement, they have a one-track mind. They have one target, and they obsess over that until they get a reaction. So and you go back to Major League Baseball moving the All-Star game so early on, really when the outrage started. Yeah, that was the target for that week. But if Major League Baseball would have held out, Clay, they made that decision on a Friday. Come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, these people calling for boycotts and all this stuff about the law, the Georgia law, they would have had already set their focus on someone else. Because what people don't realize about this whole cancel culture movement, I really do consider it a movement more than anything, they haven't gotten a lot of pushback. And the few times that people have pushed back, they mostly sat back and moved on. They have not fought back. And it's so surprising to me when you see all these like powerful public figures bow to these Twitter accounts and these New York Times pieces, because so many times what they're accusing the target of is baseless. It's so easy to debunk it. Like, I think Major League Baseball could have so easily explained, here's a perfect example. CNN reported last week that MLB source told their Jake Tapper that they did it because players would have been asked about it all season long until the All-Star game. But my response to that is, why couldn't one of the players just ask one of these reporters to explain why this Georgia law is so much more restrictive than places like in New York, which has a New Jersey, which arguably have even stricter voting laws? So when you push back, most of these people aren't able to defend their position. All they can really do is jump on the outrage train.
I don't even buy into the idea that they're going to keep asking, because first of all, you're not even having that many meetings with the media now.
Right.
It's almost all via Zoom. And if a player just says, hey, you've been asking me about that for a long time, I've answered that question. I mean, I'm happy to answer any questions you want, but I'm not going to keep answering the same question when things aren't changing. And what I said, and we were talking with Will yesterday, is all Major League Baseball had to say is, we're not moving the All-Star game because we believe that Atlanta, which has a majority black population, at least in the inner part of the city, and certainly in the larger community, including Cobb County, which has a large black population, where the Atlanta Braves Stadium is, we're going to end up costing potentially $100 million in money, much of which would have gone to black small business owners. And we were honoring Hank Aaron. And as a part of that, if you disagree with the idea of the All-Star game being played in Atlanta, we would give certainly any player or manager or official or anybody else that doesn't want to participate in the All-Star game this year, they can choose not to participate, and we'll respect their decision. But we believe the best thing we can do is go and do this event, and that is our plan. If they had said that, that would have been a story in a major way, and it would have lasted for like a day. And then most people, I think, would have said, you know what, this is the right call, and the story would have gone away. And so this is what frustrates me about decisions made like Rob Manfred's, is there's no legitimate basis to make it, and there's no one who would have actually had any issue if he had just said that, and the story goes away. Instead, he bends to the mob, and I think he's created much more of a mess for Major League Baseball than if he had just basically said what I just said in a statement.
Well, during Super Bowl week, some USA Today quote-unquote sports columnist tried to throw out some outrage and tried to get Tom Brady to apologize.
That's right. That's right.
Donald Trump hat, and he looked at her straight in the face or over Zoom. I think it was over Zoom. He just like, I'm not answering that question. That has nothing to do with the game. And
yeah,
he shut right up, didn't respond. And that story vanished moments after Tom Brady said, yeah, I'm not commenting on that. And that's all the players had to do. And like you said, they probably wouldn't even ask it that many times, maybe one time in the couple of weeks following. But I thought what Tom Brady did was so powerful, because that's just him saying, I'm not going to participate in this stuff. There's no evidence of any of this stuff. And he won because that USA Today columnist, she hasn't spoken about that story since.
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny that's the way it ended up going down. The way that he answered it, he basically did away with. Speaking of not backing down, I'm not even sure. I don't know anything much about, and you may be able to correct me on how to even pronounce his name, Rose Namajunas, I think. She's a UFC fighter. She said that one of the reasons she was fighting in UFC 261 against the UFC's only champion from China, she told the outlet she has drawn inspiration from the documentary The Other Dream Team, and that the movie is an indictment basically of communism, and some people were upset about being against communism, which to me is really kind of a crazy spot. And they wanted her to apologize for saying that one of the things that she wanted to do was fight and beat China because of their communistic background. And what's kind of wild about that is people wanted her to apologize. She said, screw you guys, basically. I'm not apologizing.
About this is, I was looking at the headlines for this story. I'll read you one. I think I remember it's from MMA, it's a pretty popular site, and they're like, how dare she inject politics into sports? I'm like, wait a minute, here's where you draw the line, because you said she's anti-communism, but you had no problem with all these other athletes injecting politics into sports for the past 4 or 5 years, but here's where you draw the line. And this story, and she's getting a lot of flack, and people are calling her to apologize. She's just like, I'm not apologizing.
Amen. I love it.
she said a few things that, you know, I think it's pretty easy to make a case against communism. I mean, you know, she used a quote that a lot of people, I guess, aren't familiar with. She said, better dead than red. It's an old slogan that was used during the Cold War. It's a dueling slogan with better red than dead. It's essentially, you answer the question, it was say, you know, is it better to be communist or dead? That's just red or dead. And she made a few mistakes saying, like, the fighter that she's fighting, you know, who is Chinese, that, you know, she figures she's quote-unquote red, which means that she's a communist. I mean, you know, that part's not true, but in the heat of an exchange during fight, you know, whatever. But the bigger picture is she's absolutely right. She was brave enough to say something that, I mean, I don't think you have to be brave at all, but in this day and age in the media and sports, it takes a lot of courage to come out against communism, I guess. But yeah, like Ariel Helwani tried to get her to apologize and all these other blogs, and she just like, not happening.
By the way, what about, is this story underplayed? And Dana White effectively, I believe, at UFC 264 in July, indoors, they're planning on having a completely full crowd. And I don't know how much attention that has gotten so far, but that's a pretty awesome statement, I think. And the UFC in general has been pretty fantastic about trying to get back to some form of normalcy.
I try not to be, a big fan of somebody, but I have so much respect for Dana White, not just
Same
like
here.
A businessman and a promoter, but just the guts he has. I mean, through this entire COVID thing, I think all these commissioners and presidents of sports, they all just kind of followed the lead, tried to avoid any controversy, didn't really seem to go out on any limb. Dana White was the one that said, No, I'm going to do what I think is best, and I'm going to do what's best for my fighters and my brand. And I don't think any commissioner or technically the president has handled the coronavirus in sports better than Dana White. And his product has been excellent since, and it's working. You see every quarter Disney announce how much like ESPN Plus subscribers are rising. The focal point of ESPN Plus, at least right now, until baseball comes, is the UFC. I think the UFC picked up a lot of fans and viewers over the past year because for a while between like April and mid-July, it was the only professional sports league going on. So I just have so much respect for him, and I'm not surprised to see this. I think it's going to be a great event. They do such a good job. But you know, I talk a lot about the demise of boxing and some of these other sports leagues out of touch with their fans. There is not a guy in charge of any business, in my opinion, that's more in touch with what his fans want than Dana White.
This is a funny story that you wrote about recently. The AP style book came out and said the term mistress, this I'm reading directly from them on Twitter, don't use the term mistress for a woman who is in a long-term sexual relationship with and is financially supported by a man who is married to someone else. Certainly a lot of athletes would be familiar with the concept of a mistress. According to the AP, by the way, instead, use an alternative like companion, friend, or lover on first reference and provide additional details later. What do you think about the term mistress being considered offensive and it now being replaced by the phrase friend?
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of, kind of a funny way, when the NBA said they were going to replace the word owner with governor.
With governors, yeah.
Those aren't synonyms. Those don't mean the same thing. Friend and mistress don't mean the same thing, nor does a lover.
By the way, if it could, then men could get away with a lot more, right? Because if your wife was like, so is this woman who's been texting you all the time, is she your mistress? And you were like, no, she's just my friend, and you're trying to say it as if it's the same thing. I don't really like the term mistress. She's more of a friend. I don't think that it would have the same connotation.
Yeah, I imagine, imagine. Like,
I think mistress, by the way, is the nicest thing that most women would call another woman who is sleeping with a man that she's not married to on a regular basis.
You get a laugh. Try to envision some guy telling his wife, hey, I'm going to hang out with my friend. Is that cool? And she said, yeah, cool. You know, go ahead.
By the way, hold on. Dove,
wait. You gay? gave me credit for that. You told you gave me the go-ahead.
Dub, you have a strong theory here for the AP style book?
Yeah, I feel like whoever made this decision is definitely cheating on his wife.
And has a mistress himself?
Exactly.
Whoever is running the AP style book, it was like, hey, the term mistress is definitely way outdated. Let's just call them friends. That's a great theory. I would not want to be the guy who's in charge of the AP style book, having to go home and talk to his wife if he's married to talk about why he now finds the term mistress to be totally unacceptable for the AP, the Associated Press. That's a strong theory.
Yeah, and I also searched because I saw, you know, whatever, somebody write this. Was anybody complaining about the word mistress, or was it just some anonymous?
I've never heard anybody ever complain about it. I've never heard anybody. I mean, it's pretty descriptive. Now, I can understand if you weren't someone's mistress and you were defined as a mistress, like, okay, well, that's offensive. Like, I'm not actually sleeping with that married guy. Okay. And I can understand that. Like, misidentifying someone as a mistress, I can see how that could be offensive. But if you're actually the mistress and you're being financially supported by this guy, I don't understand how you could ever find that phrase remotely offensive. I like Dub's theory that this is a guy who's got an affair going and he's trying to camouflage it based on his job.
Yeah, and you know, when you see stuff like this, you know, Clay, we always talk, you know, people talk about like the Babylon Bee and the Onion, you know, two kind of counter satires. It's like so many things I wake up in the morning, see, I have to double check just to make sure they're real because I can't believe some of the stuff that's going on right now. Like if you look at the headlines of like the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, some of the things people are outraged about, I just can't believe it. Like it's ideal for an SNL skit. The SNL writers have never had an easier job than they do now, but except they do a poor job at writing these jokes.
Yeah, there's no doubt. One more interesting story that we talked about. We haven't really talked about that much here. There is a movement afoot, and I don't think there's enough support for it, although it will be interesting to see whether it could be. In the wake of the Major League Baseball decision to pull the All-Star game, there is now a movement afoot to potentially pull Major League Baseball's antitrust exemption. You wrote about this on OutKick. Three different senators, which is kind of a big deal because, again, it just creates a larger issue here. Senators Cruz, Hawley, and Lee are seeking to strip the antitrust exemption from Major League Baseball. That's senators from Texas, Missouri, and Utah. And it would end Major League Baseball's special immunity from antitrust laws. This is really kind of fascinating and is, again, a consequence of Major League Baseball deciding to put itself squarely in the middle of politics.
Yeah, and a couple of interesting things. I thought Senator Hawley made a really good point. All three of them had quotes that kind of explained why they were doing this. But Hawley was saying essentially that like no corporation that powerful should be able to influence voters and other businesses, which it absolutely is because, one, baseball's making a statement that those Georgia voting laws are, you know, their words, racist. Like, if voters think that, you saw a lot of businesses subsequently follow their lead and call out Georgia and stuff. In Atlanta, I don't know how far this will go. Interestingly, Senator Bernie Sanders 2 years ago had spoken about this because he had a problem with the way Major League Baseball has so much power over the minor leagues, and they had slashed some of those teams. So maybe they have some support from him. I mean, a big part of this would be Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. Does he agree with it? Is he going to try pushing this? He has criticized Major League Baseball's move. The last I know, he has not commented on Hawley, Lee, and Cruz's proposal. So I think either way, whether anything comes of this, it's probably unlikely. I do think it just shows you how big this mess baseball has got. And you could say, well, it's just three senators. But these are two, Hawley and Cruz, two of the most well-known senators really in the country. I mean, what they say carries weight. So I think that this story isn't going to go away. And if nothing else, it does put some pressure on Major League Baseball. It is very similar in some ways to like Section 230 about, you know, saying, well, we're going to, you know, release some of that protection you guys have. Again, I don't know that it's going to go anywhere, but I do think it's gotten people's attention, which I expect this new report to do as well.
As always, really good stuff, Bobby Brack. Anything else out there that I didn't tee you up for that you think is an interesting story?
I think a big funny story. You're nothing about I think it's just funny for pop culture fans, fans of America. Really nothing to do with any scandals. Governor Andrew Cuomo says a lot like Sonny Corleone. I think whenever we can ever bring the Godfather conversation back into the public, it's a great thing. I saw some hilarious memes. So if anybody is bored the next couple of days, look up some memes of governors and elected politicians as in their Godfather bodies, some hilarious stuff. You see some like Vito Corleone holding the cat and stuff. Really fantastic stuff. The internet a lot of times is a bad place. When it comes to memes of a viral story, it's the best place to be on.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talked about Deshaun Watson to start off the hour and how much peril he potentially is in from a legal situation. Top of the third hour, by the way, Danny G is going to be, I think he's got his list ready. He's gone through and looked at all of the five-star reviews, and he should be ready to roll there. And then we're going to be joined by Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated to break down the latest on the NFL draft as we now are officially 2 weeks away from the first round of the NFL draft, which will be on Thursday. Again, 2 weeks exactly from today. I believe that makes it, April the 29th? So like many of you, I am very excited about that. And I'm also intrigued. I said we were going to talk about this a little bit in the first hour. There's a new rule that is going to go in place that has now been approved by the NCAA. For a long time, if you were going to transfer, you had to sit out for a year before you were able to play at a new school. And if you're anything like me, and you can remember when you were 18 or 19 or 20 years old, a full year is, it feels like absolutely forever. And now, as you kind of break that down, a full year is gone because the NCAA has approved a new transfer rule which allows everyone out there to go one time as a transfer with no sit-out provision at all. That is, you can go from playing for one school, and the next year you can be playing for another one. And now, what's intriguing to me about this is there are going to be a lot of guys, and probably girls too, but probably most of the focus is going to be on football and basketball, where the so-called transfer portal is wildly popular now. And we've had exceptions to this rule for a while. You could get a waiver. You could have a hardship granted for NCAA rules to allow you to transfer and play almost immediately. And the big waiver that was always granted was if you graduated in a rapid fashion, you were able in 3 years and still had a year of eligibility left, you were allowed to transfer under the so-called grad transfer rule and play somewhere else. But what's wild about all this is there's this, I think, a little bit of an illusion that there are going to be a lot of available spots. I think what's going to end up happening a lot here is many players are going to think, oh, there's a lot of interest in my skill set, and they are going to go and put their name in the transfer portal. And I think you're starting to see this happen already. And then there's not going to be as much interest potentially in them as they anticipated. I also think this is going to be interesting to follow because is it going to benefit the blue blood programs or is it going to benefit the next tier of programs? Because you can see a situation where if you're a 4 or 5 star recruit and you go to a top school and you're not able to crack the depth chart, where there might be some interest potentially in you going somewhere else. But you can also, I would think, at least, contemplate how this could become an issue where if you go to a team and they're just not very good and you are a stud athlete, that maybe you decide, hey, you know what? I'm tired of playing on this crappy team And maybe the reason you stayed and played on this crappy team was because you didn't think that you were going to be able to sit out for a year and you didn't want to spend all that time. And now you get the opportunity to leave. I could make you an argument that this is going to be an incredible boon for the biggest and best programs because there's going to be even more demand for opportunities to go play for those programs going forward. At a minimum, what I think it's very clear to say is this starts to shift some of the power away from coaches and creates a bit of perpetual free agency now in college basketball and in college football, the two sports that the largest number of people care about. Because if you can go out there and get five or six different transfers a year, it allows you to remake your roster on the fly. It also allows you to encourage guys that you may have signed that aren't as good as you anticipated to maybe go ahead and go play at a better level that better suits their overall athletic ability and talents. So I think this is a seismic shift in college athletics that is going to make a 4 or 5 year player much, much rarer. And I think a lot of athletes are going to take advantage of this one-time transfer rule, or at least attempt to take advantage of this one-time transfer rule going forward. All right, when we come back, Danny G has got his pencil poised. He is ready. He's going to read some of our five-star reviews. Going to dive in a little bit more to the Deshaun Watson story. Also, going to talk to Albert Breer about the latest in the world of the NFL draft, which is exactly 2 weeks from today. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Go give us 5 stars. Search out my name, Clay Travis. Search out Outkick. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.